first of all, obviously there are a lot of elements to the plan. Could you kind of briefly describe the overarching conceptual framework behind the reform?
Sure. Well, the overarching conceptual framework involves three main areas, and those areas stem from looking at high-performing or fast-accelerating school systems from around the world. The three areas are great teachers and leaders. So we see in high-performing and fast-accelerating systems that they pay a lot of attention to the quality of the educator workforce, both in the classroom teacher side and then the building leadership side. So there, this great teachers and leaders component is one of the three parts of our reform proposal. The second major area is high expectations and fair measures. And so that second area comes from looking at high-performing and fast-accelerating systems, have an alignment between what their expectations for students are, and in many cases those are called standards. Here in Iowa we call them the Iowa Core. So there's an alignment between the expectations and what's being taught, and then what's being measured. So the second element or component of our reform agenda is around trying to get better alignment between the expectations and what's being taught and what's being measured. The third major area or focus area of our reform proposal is around innovation, and that comes from just looking at high-performing organizations of any kind never sit still. They're always experimenting with new approaches, trying new things, and so there is an element in this to accelerate and support innovation in schools in the state. So very broadly and generally, the three areas of great teachers and leaders, high expectations and fair measures, and building a spirit of innovation are three focus areas.
Mm-hmm. What are the key changes from the October blueprint to the plan released last week? Obviously, the teacher compensation component has sort of been punted to the legislature. Are there other major changes?
Well, I would on that point of the teacher compensation piece, I would say that it's been that's been delayed for further study, and the reasons for that really are twofold. One is that we felt that the state system wasn't ready to engage in that conversation. Skeptical reactions and a low level of understanding around what we were trying to accomplish with it. So we have work to do to help people understand what our approach was. And incidentally, last month, the National Education Association, the largest teachers union in the country, released a report detailing the future of the education profession that was very much in line with the proposal Governor Branstad put in his blueprint in October. So there's a convergence around this idea of teacher leadership roles, mentor, master teacher leadership roles, and peer evaluation and support. But this is not an idea that's taken hold in Iowa yet. So we have work to do to build understanding and to build up the debate around that. And also we want to take that issue on at the top of a new budget cycle. So right now we're halfway through a two-year budget cycle in Iowa. So most of the resources have already been allocated for next year. When you talk about educator compensation, that's the largest expenditure in education. So we want to engage in that discussion at a time when we have all the chips on the table in terms of the resources that are available. But to more directly answer your question around what changes have occurred with the blueprint, there have been some items removed, some items modified, and some elements that have been added. So those were based on discussions around the state. I think the key changes, the key addition that we see is some changes to the way the assessment system redesign looks, and the addition of a discussion, a statewide discussion around what we do with the school year and extended school day. So that was something that didn't appear in the blueprint at all in October, but it was something that, as we traveled the state, everyone wanted to, practically every meeting, people wanted to talk about extended day, extended school year, or alternative calendars. So this is a discussion that is ready, is right in Iowa, is ready for debate. So we'll engage in that But many of the elements that are in the blueprint, the ideas that are in the blueprint definitely formed the foundation on which we designed the legislative proposal. And it goes back to those three, four areas I talked about previously. Those clearly are driving our thinking in terms of what elements go into the proposal.
The cost is identified as $25 million in the first fiscal year. Is it anticipated that it will have a similar price tag in the years after that? Obviously, teacher compensation would be a different animal altogether, but outside of that, would you expect it to be basically a continuing $25 million cost, or would that be less or more in future years?
There would be elements that would be the same, that would be ongoing cost, and there are some elements that sunset, so we only need a, you know, they're a one-time expenditure and then they go away. And then there are some elements that would balloon or get larger over time. My expectation would be that this $25 million, $17 million of which is new, $8 million of which is redirected from other purposes, would be a starting point, and I would expect to see us build on that expenditure over the next several years.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the things I've read and have heard have basically been people withholding opinions until they see the legislation. What's the timeline to get it released?
I hope that we can get it released this week. We put the final touches on it earlier this week, and so it was in the hands of the bill drafters, and they're usually pretty very confident about turning around the changes. So I'm optimistic that we'll get something, some exact legislation out this week. We're looking at something in the neighborhood of about 160 pages of legislation. So it's a fairly extensive bill.
Do you expect that it's going to be a single bill, or is it going to be grouped pieces?
It's an omnibus bill, so it's a single bill with multiple components.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a timeline on getting through the legislature? Obviously, you want to get it done by the end of the legislative session, but is there trying to get it done prior to scheduled adjournment?
Well, I think we'd be thrilled if that were the case. I know that, and the governor knows that there will need to be some, thorough vetting and discussion, and some amendment and changes, alteration and augmentation of this proposal. And we welcome that. We're trying to find the right mix of policies the right mix of policies for Iowa. So it needs to go through this democratic legislative process of discussion and amendment and alteration. I think that we'll go through a policy discussion with the legislature early on, and then we'll get into a funding discussion later in the legislative session. But I don't expect this would be something that would cause the session to extend beyond its natural timelines, but it may, because it's a very complex bill with a lot of parts and it has a number of funding implications, I do think it will be something that we'll be working on through the whole session.
What do you expect its prospects are going to be in the Senate to emerge in roughly similar form to how it's proposed now?
Well, I'm very optimistic that we'll get an education reform bill passed in Iowa this session, and I think the governor has worked very hard to try and keep the door open to both chambers and both parties, where we can come together in a bipartisan manner and stand in support of an education reform bill. I've really been encouraged with the leadership in the Senate and in the House. The Senate, of course, controlled by Democrats, and the House controlled by Republicans. Been impressed with the leadership on both sides, and that they also are trying very hard not to make this discussion radioactive to the other side. Everyone's trying very hard to keep the door open where we can come together in support of an education reform package.
We've talked sort of in general terms. I'd like to get into some specifics. The component that would increase selectivity for the teaching profession, is there any concern that that would exacerbate teacher shortages?
Well, we have shortages in some areas, and we have great surpluses in others. So there is an element to get more selective about who we allow to be an educator, and that's that study or that policy direction comes from looking at some of the highest performing systems in the world. For example, Singapore and South Korea only admit around 2 out of 10 applicants to be teachers actually get to be teachers. And in Finland, that is 1 in 10. So these high-performing nations are far more selective than in the United States, where practically anyone who wants to be a teacher eventually gets in. So we're trying to introduce some elements of selectivity into those areas. We are also coupling that those increased selectivity elements with larger scale recruiting strategies. And so there's an element to increase recruiting for hard to fill positions in Iowa. That goes hand in hand with a STEM advisory council that the governor created that has a group that's working on strategies to attract people in STEM fields, particularly the math and science teachers that we struggle in getting, recruit them into education. And then I think over this next year, as we discuss compensation, we will look at differentiating pay for hard-to-fill areas and sort of addressing shortage areas that we have with additional compensation. So the teacher labor market is reacting to the fact that we pay everyone the same. It reacts with surpluses and shortages. We have surpluses of high school social studies and PE teachers and elementary school teachers, and we have shortages of math, science, and special education teachers. So that those issues beg us to adjust the compensation levels accordingly.
What role would assessments play in teacher evaluation and personnel decisions? That's a concern I've heard from the ISEA.
Sure. Well, this legislation doesn't put a firm percentage that student achievement would be used, a firm percentage at which student achievement would be used to determine a person's evaluation. So we don't see in this legislation some of the things that you've seen in, say, Tennessee or Colorado, which say that half of an evaluation has to be made up of a student test scores. The reasons for that is that that's really overdriving and asking too much of the of our assessment systems. Our assessment systems weren't designed to do that, and they're just not that precise. So our bill does say that student achievement should be used as a validating component in an evaluation. So our legislative proposal would have school districts evaluate their educators, and where student achievement results are available, because a majority of teachers don't teach in tested subjects and grades, so for most teachers this is not something that would even be possible. But our legislation says where it's available, where the assessments are available, they are to be used to validate the observation. So in other words, you're looking for, if you get a really high evaluation rating from your supervisor, we should also expect to see high student achievement gains accompanying that. And those things aren't lining up, then I think there are some questions to be raised at the local level about the capacity of the evaluation system.
So would those be then local district decisions on what weight to give those when it were available?
That's precisely correct. The legislation, all it says is that student achievement will be considered as a validating in employee evaluations. And again, you know, this is because we only have assessments for roughly 30% of our educators. That's about as far as you should go with it. And the states that are assigning firm 50% numbers to this are really struggling with how to translate that into reality when they don't have assessments in place for all their educators. They're having to take, for example, a physical education teacher, and that physical education teacher is having to decide if they want to be associated with math or reading scores for their own personal evaluation. So you end up with some nonsensical policy decisions when you force those policies onto districts.
Would the legislation, the language you're talking about, the validating, would that forbid a district from using an assessment tool as a primary measure for teacher evaluation where those are available?
It would not prohibit that. That certainly could be something that could be locally decided. We are providing from the state value-added measures, which are really, in my opinion, it's look at student achievement results and make an inference on educator quality, you should be using a value-added measure system to do that. So the state will be, through our legislation, the state would be providing a value-added measures, value-added results for all the educators in tested subjects.
So, and for clarity, the value-added measures measure student growth rather than, say, an absolute score against a norm, right?
That's correct. So the value-added, in the simplest terms, makes a prediction based on the student's previous test results where they should score. So it makes a projection on where the student is expected to score, and then evaluates where the student actually scored versus the projection.
Mm-hmm.
So if the student comes in over what's expected or projected, that's called a value added. And the inference would be that the teacher is responsible for that gain.
Right. Aside from the cost of the proposal, what's the larger education funding picture in Iowa? Do you see it that additional resources need to be devoted to education beyond the strict costs of these proposals to provide the tools to meet the standards being articulated?
Sure. Well, I think the overall budget picture in Iowa is better than in many states. Iowa has an economy that's been fairly resilient through this recession. We have a low 5.8% unemployment rate in the state. And I think through some efforts of the governor and the legislature in the last session, the state has gotten its fiscal house in order. And so going forward, those are all going to present opportunities whereby I think we can look at directing additional resources into education and investing in education, both as trying to improve it as a quality program we offer our students, but also as an economic driver for the state, both to attract businesses and jobs here, but also to build our state's human capital, where we have a talented, well-educated people that live in Iowa.
What costs would districts be expected to bear, expected or required to bear, for certain elements? For example, the SAM would seem to, after initial startup, would seem to be a cost that would fall to the districts.
Sure. Well, and local staffing, decisions around how buildings are staffed and resources for staffing buildings are local decisions and their local funds. So the school district would be making the decision on how they wanted to create a SAM position and what its configuration be, and they'd be responsible for the salary for that part. The state's responsibility would be to create the statewide training system and support system around how to train someone to be a school administration manager, the data systems that the school administration managers would use in keeping track of school data. So these are things that the state would be providing. So our role is really to build the infrastructure and build the pathway, the responsibility around the decision, employment decision, and then the employment cost of that person should reside with the local school district.
And has there been any estimates on what these proposals would cost school districts beyond what the $25 million articulated in state funding?
Well, it really depends on how many school districts decided to use the SAM. There's no provision in this that requires a school district to use a school administration manager, but it is an option. So in many cases, this is an example, and also the competency-based education element that's in the innovation component. All we're doing is creating a pathway, and it's a local decision if they want to pursue this and expend resources toward it. So I guess my probably not very satisfactory answer to your question of how much it would cost a local district is it depends on the local district's decisions.
Are there requirements in the proposal that would require increased costs on the part of school districts or increased spending on the part of school districts to implement?
Actually, there are a number of elements that would reduce costs to districts. So, for example, the statewide recruiting and hiring system, that's something that we would be picking up the tab for at the state level. The state is looking to pay for a college entrance exam such as ACT. Currently, there are a number of districts in the state that pay for this for their students, such as Des Moines Public Schools, for example, pays for that for their 11th graders. The state would be picking up the tab for those assessments. So there are a number of elements where the, we'd actually be reducing cost to the local districts in this.
Are there other ones where there would be increased costs, or are you saying that there are none that require increased spending to implement?
You can make an argument, I think, around the statewide literacy program that I think most people are familiar with it, and that it entails a retention component at the end of third grade.
But, right.
The statewide literacy program could be something that would cause an increase in expenses at the local level, because we're basically directing them to put in place a literacy program from preschool through kindergarten, first grade, second grade, and third grade that provides either lower class sizes or summer school or extended day or tutoring supports to students that are not meeting basic literacy levels. We are, as part of our redirected funds, we are we're going to, as part of the governor's budget, we would be requiring that part of the money that districts receive for class size reduction currently be used specifically for this literacy program in the early grades. So depending on how the district structured it, I can see that being an area that would lead to increased expenses. The only other one I could think of would be the we're requiring annual evaluation, so every teacher every year. As a mechanism to provide more regular feedback to all of our educators in the state. So that's certainly an increased responsibility over the every 3 years model that we currently use for veteran teachers. I would argue that this is a change in priority. We're basically saying that the priority of the principal needs to be in getting in classrooms, observing, and providing feedback and support, coaching to the classroom teachers on how they can get better. So this is, for me, a priority shift, though I think some would argue that it's an expense issue.
Now, for clarity, you are the state. It would provide under this proposal $10 million for that literacy program, correct?
That's right. So we think that the state impact would be $10 million. Roughly $5.5 million of that we would be looking to redirect out of the class size reduction funds.
But what you're saying is that in addition to that $10 million, there might be, in some cases, school districts that spend more money to fulfill that requirement.
They certainly could. It would depend on the decisions that they make.
Right. The ISCA has also expressed some concern about maybe a dearth of professional development in the proposal. Could you address that, I guess, that concern?
You know, one of the things that we have tried to do in this proposal is better align the professional development that we have in the state. We have 9 area education agencies or intermediary agencies in the state that are providing millions of dollars of professional development already. Our proposal calls for unification and streamlining of those professional development offerings around state priorities. So this year, for example, we should be prioritizing the implementation of the state standards of the Iowa Core, and then the implementation of an instructional program called Response to Intervention. So we should be focused on those two statewide priorities now. Currently, it's really fractured and chaotic about what the focus of professional development is. So while I would certainly say that I agree with the State Education Association, agree with ISEA, that we'd love to have more professional development opportunities into this, I think the proposal does address professional development by saying we need to be more focused on the things that we're currently using the millions of dollars that we spend on professional development already.
Mm-hmm. What do you see as the key roadblocks to either passage or effective implementation of this? What things do you think might hang it up?
Sure. I think that our proposal is an attempt to get at a bipartisan consensus on a number of contentious issues. So we tried to pitch a proposal that would be received with optimism and that would contain any poison pills for any either side of the chamber or either party. It's an attempt to put together a proposal that, you know, we can stand behind for the long term from both chambers, and regardless of what administration is in charge, that we have proposals that we can stand behind for the long term. So, you know, any attempt to put together a set of packages, a package like that, is vulnerable to extremist views. So extreme left or extreme right views represent dangers to this legislative proposal.
Mm-hmm. What will success look like in concrete terms, and in what time frame? How and when will we know that this has worked or not worked?
Right. Let me expand on that last question just a little bit.
Okay.
For a second. With this proposal, we're trying to get to the right balance of pressures and supports. So you can swing the pendulum too far in one direction, where we're reducing funding and we're using lots of pressure and accountability mechanisms. So we can swing the pendulum too far in that direction. We can also swing the pendulum too far in the other direction, where we're just dumping more money into the system without any accountability or strategic thought to how we're spending it. So neither one of those two extremes is good for the long term. So our proposal is attempting to find the right balance of pressure and supports toward improvement. In regard to your question about what will it look like if it's successful, I think we will have some short term successes if we can get some significant legislation passed, and I think the governor's reform proposal is bold and sweeping in its scope. So if we can get the majority of these elements through, I think that will be a short-term success. But I think we're focused on long-term success, and what we're talking about is in a decade, Iowans are able to say that their school system is held in regard among the best school systems anywhere in the world, that we have one of the highest performing school systems globally. So that's our goal, and that's the standard at which we will hold this reform effort to.
What's the what would be the best measure of that in a decade? What numbers, what assessments would you look at to show that?
Sure. Some of them are certainly qualitative in nature. So, you know, when people start naming the best school systems, you know, within the United States, we often talk about Massachusetts. Internationally, we start to talk about our neighbors in the Canadian provinces that are outperforming the U.S. school system. And then internationally, the Singapore, the South Korea, the Finland, these countries that are among the highest in the performing in the world. So I think from a qualitative stance, we would want Iowa schools to again be mentioned in the same breath as those high-performing systems. From a quantitative point of view, we'd want to see that the achievement results for our students are on par with some of these high-performing systems we have in the bill that are in our proposed legislation, that our students will take the international PISA assessment in the ninth grade. So if our results begin to emerge on par with those highest performing systems in the world, I think that would be a quantitative measure of our success. And then I think, you know, from an outcomes perspective, if graduates of Iowa's school system are getting into top colleges and are earning top jobs, and we are a economic draw for the relocation of industry and STEM field jobs and industry to Iowa, that will also be an indication that we've been successful. For our school system is an attractive to economic prosperity to the state.
In October, the blueprint was presented as a package and explicitly said not a something to cherry pick from. What if there are specific elements that appear to be hanging passage up? Would you be willing to forego those just to get something done? You said that if a majority of them can get passed, so that suggests you are amenable to not necessarily a piecemeal approach, but certainly doing something rather than nothing. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that is a fair assessment, and we never came into this with a rigid mindset that it would be too much. We would have an incredible show of hubris if we came in saying that we knew exactly the entire package of the right things to do for the state. I think we are hopeful and optimistic that, you know, through our democratic process in the legislature, that there are changes made to this, that there are great ideas that are added to this, and that we emerge with a high-quality education bill. So, you know, we're trying as much as possible. But, you know, this is not about trying to get a short-term political victory. It's trying to get in place a set of policies that make sense for Iowa and give us the capacity to be among the best in the world. And if that involves amendments and changes to this legislative proposal, we would be thrilled to have those positive changes made.
Are there deal breakers in this list? Things that must be included for the governor to sign it, or things that cannot be excised? The key elements that you feel so strongly about that essentially non-negotiable in broad terms.
I would be hesitant to adopt a rigid stance like that at this point in the session. I think the governor and certainly myself, we are committed to the values that are behind every part of this component. We're committed to the value of literacy and establishing a literacy program. We're committed to the value of high-quality educators being in our schools, and then we need some specific strategies about how we're going to accomplish that. So I think that we are going to be very rigid and stand behind the values that are behind this, but we're open and flexible on the specific strategies on how we get there.
Kind of on the flip side, what three elements, specific elements of this package would you point to as having the potential to have the biggest standalone impact toward your goals?
Well, I think the changes to the selectivity and recruiting of the educator workforce will have an impact. Being very selective, as I mentioned before, being very selective of who gets to be an educator is nearly a universal theme you see among high-performing school systems. So I think if we are selective about who we allow to be an educator and also are supportive of our educators in continuously getting better and working on the craft, the art and science of teaching, I think that is a big driver toward improvement. I also think that the redesign of the assessment system is long overdue in Iowa. And we can provide better and more parsimonious, or that's not a good word to use for this, but more direct and useful measures than we currently have in place now. If we can implement those, I think that will be something that lifts us toward improvement. And I think if we can, you know, in the last area, if we can get this a spirit of innovation built in, where there is risk taking and supports around risk taking and trying new approaches, and trying to learn better ways to do things. If we can build those into the culture of our education system, I think that's a big driver too. So I think that all three of those elements can be big drivers that can improve our system.